From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Tuesday, Election Day, in the race for school boards across New York State. It used to be that school board elections were rather sleepy occasions. School board races are nonpartisan by New York law. You don't see political party affiliations with the candidates. These are largely thankless jobs that involve a lot of time and a lot of community service. But these days, community passions are turning to schools, classroom lessons, educational philosophy, and yes, school board races. You've probably seen video of countless school board meetings all across the country where parents raised heated objections, arguing over what is being taught or not taught. That's part of what made last week's elections rather unusual. And that could explain why so many winners have told us thanks, but no thanks, to coming on the talk show this week. We routinely welcome the winners of a variety of political races, and they're almost always eager to come on. But school board races have been divisive and sensitive, and it's possible that winners are waiting for things to cool down. Even though boards are supposed to be nonpartisan, there is always at least an undercurrent of politics. That's not all that unusual. But now, things feel kind of supercharged. That's become an overcurrent, especially in regards to who controls the curriculum. An analysis from the Daily Gazette, based near Albany, finds that across New York State, so-called parental rights candidates lost pretty big last week. And here is analysis from Justin Murphy of the Democrat and Chronicle. Quote, voters in Rochester's suburbs Tuesday rejected a crop of candidates running in opposition to their school district's anti-racism efforts, mirroring similar results from last year. In districts across Monroe County, Brighton, Churchville-Chili, Gates-Chili, Greece, Penfield, Pittsford, Rush Henrietta, Spencerport, Webster, candidates asked for voter support on platforms of increasing parental involvement, including in curriculum and on the library shelves, where some schools' movement toward diversification have run up against parental complaints. Nearly all of those candidates lost, most of them handily. The only exception was in Greece, where residents elected two such candidates. End quote. As for the larger trend of voters rejecting most of those kinds of candidates, why is that? And what are the candidates who you're about to hear from, what have they heard from voters? What have they heard from their communities? What did we learn last week? And what would they like to do on their various school boards? My guests this hour are some of the winners, and let me welcome them now. Elected to the Fairport School Board, Brian Moritz is with us. Brian, welcome. Thanks for making time.
Absolutely, Evan. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Elected to the Greece Central School Board, Mark Bonagario is with us. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Thank you.
And elected to the West Irondequoit School Board, Courtney Schouse is with us. Courtney, welcome. Thanks for making time.
Thank you, Evan. Glad to be here.
Let me just ask all three of you to start by telling us what perhaps issues or concerns you heard most often. What was the maybe animating idea or concern that voters were expressing to you in your various districts? And I'll start with Brian in Fairport. Go ahead, Brian.
Thanks, Evan. I appreciate that. And, you know, I think one of the interesting things about us in Fairport this year was that we had probably the contentious race for school board last year. And this year's was a lot more quiet. And so what I heard a lot from voters was just kind of overall, to be honest, kind of exasperation, I think, with how divisive, how political, how kind of messy the school board elections have gotten. And when I talked to what's interesting was when I talked to most voters, I think, you know, the issues that you brought up that you hear around school board meetings, you know, the teachings on diversity, equity, inclusion, the teachings about books and about sexual orientation and sexual education and all of that, that didn't really come up with most voters. You know, they were more interested in kind of, I think, the, you know, for lack of a better word, the mundane stuff that we talk about on school board, you know, budget, why are taxes going up? You know, one question I heard a lot is our enrollment in Fairport's kind of been on a steady decline for a number of years. It's starting to level out. But why are taxes going up when enrollment's going down? And so matters of budget, matters of like facilities and that kind of thing is what I heard mostly from voters in our district.
Mark, what did you hear in Greece?
Well, I'm sad to say that one of the biggest concerns was an increase in violence in schools. We heard that concern from a lot of parents and a lot of teachers as well. It really wasn't very focused on issues of budget, although that certainly came up, and we've seen the same kinds of trends that Brian just mentioned. But yes, student behavior, lack of an applied code of conduct, things like that. And yes, certainly concerns about curriculum and an effort to instill a different set of values that's not always consistent with what you hear on the media.
Okay. So
those were big concerns.
Okay. And Courtney and West Irondequoit, what were the concerns that you heard most often?
Yeah, so I have a sort of a different perspective or an interesting take on this, because the reasons for running for the board really grew out of my involvement with students and my involvement in a number of different committees with the district already. I was very active in our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Coalition, which actually branched off into a number of subcommittees and work that was actively influencing and involved in our strategic plan that we set forth for 2021 through 2026. And so the four main parts of our strategic plan included curriculum, instruction, implementation, and the well-being of self and community. And some of the work that I was doing already with the students starting back in 2021 around sort of building awareness around marginalized voices and helping students to express how they felt about missing pieces of curriculum, and also our district approaching the Pass Stone curriculum, and also working towards incorporating the New York State culturally responsive curriculum. I think our district is already working towards a lot of putting into action the words in the strategic plan. And so as I was gathering signatures and talking to parents and also sort of building my platform around student voices and what students were telling me, that's what my focus was on. And there was a lot of support for the parents that were signing off on my ballot in support of that. So I really went into this hoping to become inclusive and welcoming, and to be able to be from the inside helping to build a truth and honest and genuine approach towards our strategic plan. And no district is perfect. I'm not saying our district is perfect, but I'm saying that, you know, I think we were on a good roll here, and I wanted to help keep that momentum going. So that's where my approach is coming from.
Yeah, and you're right, Courtney. That is kind of a different set of issues and concerns that students and parents expressed to you compared to what Mark is saying. And what I want to make clear sort of at the outset of this conversation, both to listeners but also to our guests, is that I think we have to be able to talk about this in productive and constructive ways. And everybody that we reached out to about coming on the program today, including the guests on the program, but also some who did not come on the program, you know, we're curious to know, you know, what do you want to talk about? And you know, so what are some of the goals? Someone like Mark, I think, is, you know, maybe, first of all, I'm grateful for the time. And second of all, you know, as I mentioned at the outset, in this particular county, Mark was one of the few candidates who you might put on sort of a parental rights kind of slate who won. And I don't want Mark to feel either kind of ganged up on or anything like that. I want to be able to have a conversation about where the differences are. And mm-hmm. these are elected leaders now in the community in different places, but they may be seeing and hearing different things. And I think we have to be able to talk through those things. So, so Mark, let me just start in that way by asking you the parental rights slates, for example. I mean, is that a fair term? You put yourself on, I guess, on that slate?
I certainly would, although we didn't run on that. And as you probably know, I ran with two others. and two of us were elected, we would certainly support parental rights. In fact, we did an interview with the Greece Teachers Association, and we were asked about different stakeholders. And it was interesting that parents were not included among the stakeholders. So we absolutely wanted to stand in for representation for parents. But I think there's been, that term has been used somewhat in a pejorative, and even some of the other language that has been used, I think the DNC article that you referenced kind of put us in that light, and I think that's unfortunate. I will tell you, just to your comments just a moment ago, we have been very involved in trying to engage our school district and every perspective. I've met with most of the board members. In fact, we have a group of people who have been very engaged in trying to get dialogue going. And I'm happy to say that we've actually been able to get a community discussion group together with a variety of perspectives. So I agree with you 100%. The only way we can solve some of these issues is by having honest dialogue, and we're all for that.
Yeah, and Mark, I will say that, you know, when we talk about the broader strokes of it, I don't know if there's a candidate anywhere who would say I'm against parental rights. You know, I think I understand a little bit more granularly what your platform entails. But can you explain to listeners, what's an example, whether it's a book in a school library that you think is inappropriate, or an overall sort of arc to where you see education or curriculum going? Can you be specific with listeners about what is troubling that maybe spurred you to run and that you'd like to change?
Yeah, so there are a number of things. First of all, almost every school board talks about transparency and communication, and that was very much lacking. So who is the transparency and communication supposed to be with? Well, primarily it's parents and guardians. So that wasn't happening. We, in fact, did get what I will call some misinformation regarding some of the, not so much the curriculum. There's this wave of what is called anti-racism curriculum, and we're all against racism. We want fairness in our schools. We want people to be treated as people, not as members of any ideological group or identity group. We're completely against that kind of thing. We want just to treat people as other human beings, respect each other, value each other, and not carve ourselves up into different identity groups that ultimately get pitted against each other. We did see some of that happening in some of the classes. I don't think that it was a district-wide effort, but it was certainly happening. And it was basically targeting some students and calling them oppressors, things like that, and just creating a division within our schools that really doesn't need to be there. We think we need to come together. And so that's an example. We have a number of specific examples. And then I'll also say the CSC proposal that is being proposed in Albany is something that, yeah, a lot of us have big concerns about. We don't think that it's the responsibility of teachers or school districts to be teaching kindergartners through 12th graders about sexual activities or sexual mores. That's the role of the parents.
Okay, so a couple things there, and then I'll let other guests respond. Just working backwards, I'm not really aware of any district that wants to teach kindergartners about the mechanics of sex, whether it's sort of heteronormative sex or otherwise. Are you?
We have seen the proposals that State Senator Summerbrook has proposed for
graphic kindergarten sex education.
Well, it starts in kindergarten, and by third grade, they're talking about sexual pleasure. I have a big objection to that.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Kindergarten, they talk about things like safe relationships, and certainly there's a good element to some of these things, but they get pushed beyond what's appropriate.
Okay, so to you, the kindergarten stuff, that's fine. Maybe the first grade, second grade. I'm not really seeing the specific objection until you say third grade, unless I'm missing part of your critique there.
Well, I think parents need to be very involved in the process to make sure we all know what's going on, because as we're seeing in some of the Greece schools, certain teachers will push beyond what is what the district itself says they're trying to achieve. So parental involvement, parental rights, if you want to call it that, is important to be in, for parents to be involved.
I hear that. I just don't know specifically in kindergarten, first, second grade, what you've pointed to a third grade example. You don't think sexual pleasure should be brought up for to third graders, but in K through two, I guess you're saying teachers freelance sometimes.
They certainly can, and that's one of the rights that the unions support for them, and fine, but just keep parents aware. And no, I am not aware of anything specific in kindergarten, but that's where the transparency becomes critical. So we need to be involved.
Okay. Let me we'll get back to some of the other parts of the critique in a moment. Courtney, can I ask you what you make of some of that, and if you have similar concerns about teaching of sex education?
Okay, so the sex education piece aside, because this is news to me, I can definitely speak to some of the comments that were made about identities. I think that to say that we want to forego seeing people not based on their identities, but value everybody and treat people as counterproductive.
As individuals, is what he's saying. As individuals, yeah.
Exactly. I think you can't see people as individuals if you don't see them for who they identify as. And, you know, part of what I believe in is creating meaningful opportunities for dialogue across identities and then sharing real lived experiences, because that helps build empathy and connectedness among different groups. So it's not until we can actually allow people to identify who they are and share with us their lived experiences and how they're existing in our society, because not everybody is having this heteronormative white experience in the society in which we live, and we need to be open and ready to accept that and to listen to that and understand that if we're going to move through this experience together and within our school system, and understand that we need to accept the fact that we're not coming from a single identity that we're all going to learn to respect each other from. And part of that does include sexuality. And I don't know what this curriculum out of the senator's office is or what this proposal is, so I guess I can't really comment. But I can also say that in our district, we've always included parent involvement, and that's how I've gotten involved in all of this work, really, as a parent, because I obviously have kids in the district. So there are many ways for parents to become involved. But just because I feel that my two kids out of the hundreds of kids in the district should learn something or not learn something, doesn't mean that I have the right to impose my belief systems on the other hundreds of kids in the district as well. And so I think this is where the dialogue comes in, where my kids have every right to be exposed and to learn from the varied perspectives of the kids around them. That is what's enriching their school experience.
Yeah, and let me just jump in for a sec, because I would like, at this point, I think maybe Mark can clarify a few things,
Then
I'll bring Brian in. But I think Mark Buonagario, who's elected to the Greece Central School Board, is with us. You just heard Courtney Schaus, who's elected to West Irondequoit School Board. And I think, Mark, what Courtney is saying, and she'll jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's one thing to say parental rights, to say, hey, you've got the right to object to a lesson and have your child not participate. It's another to say you're going to shut down a certain set of curriculum for all students because you object to it for your kid.
Correct.
And so that goes beyond parental rights. That goes beyond sort of that goes into a direction of, you know, parents sort of trampling on a kind of curriculum. So I'm curious to know if you draw certain lines there, Mark, where you see them.
Well, I think right now the trampoline is going in the other direction. We haven't been given opportunities to remove students from objectionable material, and I don't believe that that's being offered in the state senator's proposal. Maybe it is. If it is, that's good. We're not trying to shut down curriculum. We are trying to ensure fairness, and where there are things that are objectionable, certainly, especially when it comes to matters of personal morals or things like that, it shouldn't be imposed by the district or the state or anyone else. I think it sounds like we agree on that kind of thing. So, but right now that hasn't been the case. We've had kids being bullied into participation and things like in those types of things, encouraged to admit their guilt and things. And that's just inappropriate. It's bullying, and yeah, we'd rather have an opt out.
Okay, and admit their guilt in about what that you are aware of?
Assignments for kids to talk about how they are racist or particularly privileged and in ways that that make them feel less about themselves, less worthy. And we should be elevating everyone, not pulling some people down in order to raise others up. Give everyone equal opportunities and equal value.
Sure. And are you concerned that white kids are being made to feel bad about being white?
Oh, it's certainly happening.
Okay.
And you know what? At the same time, minority kids are being made to feel like they're not capable. I've had people tell me that my kid comes home from school and he says, why are they always teaching me that I can't achieve, that I'm being held back? It goes both ways. It's not fair to any of the students.
Yeah. Mark, do you think right now, if all things are equal and you've got a white kid and a black kid, that they have the same chance of success if they try equally in this country?
You know what? It's an interesting thing. Ian Rowe is a black education researcher, and he has recently released a book on personal agency. And he points out that the statistics suggest that even though there's a racial division and a racial problem, race isn't the primary factor, but rather family structure is. And that includes white kids as well as black kids or any other group. So what I would simply say is don't diminish any of those concerns, but don't make kids feel like they can't achieve because they can.
Yeah, I will say, Mark, before I kick it over to Brian, and I'm sure Courtney wants to jump in too on that, I think what you are describing is really important, that everybody be made to feel like that you don't have to give up, that you don't have to quit on yourself, because that you still have a chance, that you have an opportunity, and that if the lesson is some people have no opportunity, then they will not seek to better themselves and to grow and to thrive. Is that a fair description of your concern there?
Sure.
Okay. Good. I think it's important that we can articulate views. Yes. I think that the part that becomes sticky, difficult, is are we at a point in society where it is true that all people have equal opportunity if they put forth equal effort? And the evidence is overwhelming that we're not there yet. There's a lot. There's a long list of evidence, some of which comes from a historical set of circumstances that, it doesn't make me feel bad as a white guy to say white people in Rochester did horrifically racist things, especially in the 40s, 50s, 60s, when a lot of black families moved here looking for jobs, looking for housing, looking for homes. And I would not want my son to be raised to feel bad about just being who he is, who is a white kid. I also don't want him growing up without the knowledge of saying, I don't want him to grow up to be a person who goes, well, how come so many, you know, people are poor? And I guess they're just, it's just on them. It's just, you know, maybe their family has,
That's interesting that you say that.
Yeah.
Ian Rowe makes that point as well. It's not all on their individual merit.
Okay.
But the race thing isn't, it's somewhere in the middle. Right. And you know what? It's interesting that in the process of this dialogue, you're entering into the debate with an agenda. And this is how it goes throughout the district. And this is where parents don't have a voice. They're tried to made to feel like you're disagreeing with this perspective. Therefore, you must really be against people of color.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
I'm very invested in making sure we can describe each other accurately and not caricature and be specific. Because if the claim is that we're at a point in society where everyone has an equal opportunity and that it is extremely destructive to teach kids otherwise, then let's make sure that the evidence reflects that, and then let's talk about it. I think that there are gradations here. I think there are bad lessons. I think there are bad teachers. I think there are poor approaches that are destructive and not constructive. And I think that may be what you see at times in Greece. That may be at times what we see in a lot of places. But
that's exactly right. And when we try to bring those out, we're categorized as people who are not in favor of the anti-racism curriculum. Well, no, we're all against racism. The anti-racism curriculum is typically, when it was defined by Ibram X. Kendi, and it's specifically, if you're not on board with this set of proposals, then you're a racist. And in that regard, I reject that kind of mentality. We're for people. We support all people. Respect all people for who they are.
Okay.
And we shouldn't be doing anything other than that.
So last question for you before I kick it over to Brian is, I definitely understand what you're saying there. And I understand your objection to this is a hypothetical example that I don't know that it exists in local classrooms, but I'll use a word that you say happened in Greece, where a teacher says, hey, white students, you are oppressors. You know, that may not be a very effective way to communicate to kids about a history of oppression. And I can understand the objection and the pain that some people might feel. That is not the same as saying, hey, let's teach an accurate history in which, by learning the history, some of the white kids in your class might have some emotions that might be difficult.
100%.
Right?
Yes.
Right.
100% agreement.
Okay. So, all right, I got you there. The question just becomes, what's effective? Where's the line? How do you do it? But I don't think we can have a curriculum where nobody gets emotional ever. Where no one feels bad or sad or, kids should feel things when they learn all kinds of different things. I mean, that's history. And one of the concerns I have is it's almost like this reflexive opposition to any emotion that kids may feel about history. And I don't want to sanitize history so nobody feels emotion. But it sounds like you agree with that.
Yep.
Brian, let me ask you, you said in your district in Fairport, where you were just elected, these were not necessarily as animating issues this year. Were they last year, and does this come up ever, Brian?
So, yes and yes. Last year was a very, very emotional election in Fairport. And I can only speak to what happened in Fairport. I know kind of tangentially what happened in other districts. And, of course, last year I think was a very specific type of election, because along with the stuff we're talking about today with the culturally responsive framework and all of that, we had the masking issue and the opening schools issue. And I think that animated a lot of the discussion that certainly fueled turnout here in Fairport, I think. And now that the masking issue is off the table for the most part, I think that dialed down a lot of what you saw, a lot of the rhetoric.
you know, I did, you know, when I was out and about meeting voters at various events, I did hear, you know, some of the same things that Mark says that he and his supporters have heard about, have talked about, have brought up. And again, I can only speak from Fairport perspective. I can't speak to anything going on in Greece. But I will note that whenever we talked about it, it was all the whenever these objections are raised, it seems like they are very general in their objections. And, you know, when we ask for specific instances, can you tell us when this happened, who this happened to, it kind of gets nebulous, which makes it hard as a board member and hard as a district then to kind of work around that, right? Because if you don't, if you're only hearing kind of general terms that these things are happening, then it's hard to really critically evaluate them and to move forward with you know, addressing them if they come up, addressing them if they need addressing, and at what level they do. I did want to kind of bring up the general idea of parental involvement. And I talked about this at our Meet the Candidates night. So apologies to, you know, anybody who actually listened to that and is listening to this. but you know, part of it is, you know, I think, you know, I was a volunteer in our schools with our PTA before I got involved with the board. And, you know, first of all, I think it should be clear, any school district, every school district that I know of views parents as critical stakeholders. I don't think that's a controversial statement. I don't think anybody would object to parents and families, you know, extended families, whatever those look like for our students. Those are critical. They are critical stakeholders in that. And I do think that one of Mark's points, communication does need to be better. I know that's something we've run into in Fairport here, and we're, you know, one of the things I'm trying to do on the board is to improve communication with all stakeholders, including parents. And I think that, you know, in terms of parental involvement, I don't think it's a notion of should parents be involved. If they can, of course they should be. But I think it's to what level and how granular are they getting? You know, I was a PTA member for 4 years. We always needed members. You know, I've never known a teacher. My daughter was just finished elementary school last year. I never knew a teacher who said, you know, parents don't come and help out. They always welcome help out. And kind of to the bigger point, we do have parental involvement and parental oversight in our schools. It happened to all three of us last Tuesday. The election of a board is parental oversight. It's taxpayer oversight on the schools. You know, the Board of Education for a district, our primary job, one of our primary jobs, is to set the overall course and direction for a school district. You know, the superintendent, the administration, they're the ones who get involved with the day-to-day, the nitty-gritty, kind of like the isolated incidents, so to speak. And so it's our job as a board to make sure that we are kind of cohesive and setting the district in, to use a tortured metaphor, to get the ocean liners pointing in the right way. And so the superintendent and the teachers and the administrators can lead us in that direction.
Courtney Schaus, let me give you some space too from West Irondequoit's school board elected last Tuesday to respond to some of what you've heard too. Go ahead.
Okay. So there was a lot that was just said. I think that in response to some of the dialogue around anti-racist curriculum, that it's important to note that no district can be a welcoming and inclusive district if we're continually invalidating the experiences of our Black and Brown students. And by rejecting what we're calling anti-racist curriculum, there's no way that we are validating the fact that our Brown and Black students are having racist experiences, because they are. And I think that, you know, in one of my committee meetings, when we were approaching this topic of having, introducing anti-racist curriculum in whatever form, we were being surveyed as parents and community members and about how our community members and parents might actually react to having the introduction of anti-racist curriculum in our schools. And I brought up a point. I said, you know, I don't remember ever being asked if my kids could learn about George Washington. You never surveyed me to ask me if it was okay if my kids learned about George Washington. And there was a silence there, and I said, so if what you're including in this anti-racist curriculum is truth-telling, if it's the truth of our history in the United States and what actually happened, what was actually happening, what led up to this moment, why we have disparities, why are you asking if it's okay with me? And so I think when we get down to it, it's reframing and our thought processes around what we're actually trying to do. I am not insulted as a white person. My sons are not insulted. They do not think of themselves as oppressors.
But if they're taught in class, if a teacher says to you, you are an oppressor because you are white, is that an appropriate? I don't know for sure. I'm just listening to Mark offer his concern about what he's heard about in Greece. If that happens, is that appropriate?
No, that's not appropriate. So what's happening is that we were all born into this system, right? We didn't create it, but we're aware of it. And so it's our responsibility to work to change it. And our teachers are not equipped. Our teachers don't know how to teach to that because they didn't grow up talking about this and they didn't grow up learning about this. So what we're trying to deal with is a broken system because schools are institutions that are part of the system. That are, you know, we're not taught to interrupt cycles of racism. We don't know how to do that efficiently.
Are you concerned, Courtney, though, that as Mark says, that some students of color in particular could be taught that that they have no shot, that there is no opportunity, that it's not worth effort?
I actually think that our school system, as they are now, are teaching our students of color that they have no shot. If we stopped and we looked at our suspension rates and our discipline rates and our codes of conduct, if we actually took the time and we asked for that information from our schools now, what would that look like? What would that look like right now that our students of color are being disproportionately disciplined? I'm just curious because nationwide data will tell you that that's what's happening.
Well, we know the suspension rates are disproportionate in Monroe County. Yes, we have data on that.
So there we go. I mean, that's what we need to start looking at. We need to accept the fact that there are true racist, institutionalized racism is upheld in our school systems. Hence the reason why we need to look at our curriculum. We need to look at making sure our teachers understand that, make sure that all of our white staff, faculty, students understand that it's not because of them, but it's because of a long history in the United States. And that because we are aware of that, we need to work to change it. But yes, a teacher can't say, look at all the white students in the classroom and say you are oppressors. That's not going to be effective.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mark, you know, I'm somebody who grew up in a suburb of Cleveland that reminds me a lot of the suburbs here. I was never taught about redlining. I was never taught about economic dispossession. And I think some of what Courtney is describing is an effort to correct some of that, to be more direct about how society was structured, who had the power, who has the power, and the decisions that were made that way, even if those decisions were systemically racist, et cetera. Are those valuable goals to pursue, teaching those things that I did not learn, for example, Mark?
Absolutely. And there's we have no objection to that kind of thing. And nor do we have an objection. We're not asking anyone to give them permission whether we can teach about George Washington Carver or Malcolm X. That's a red herring kind of thing. We're talking about core values and what should be shared values. We're talking about respecting each other. We're talking about treating each other with dignity. And when we do these other kinds of things, and I'll tell you, Ryan asked about or made the comment about lack of specifics. My son was talking with two of his friends in the library, the school library, and the librarian came up to them. And one of them, a young man, is a person of color, young ladies with them. And the librarian came up to them and said, You two guys are racists and misogynists. You need to read this book. And she handed them the book White Privilege. So, you know, in that, that's only my limited experience. They're one of them. But we've seen this kind of thing over and over again. So we're talking about values. We're not talking about history. Absolutely, we want to teach history in all of it.
Do you let me ask it this way here? If we think about what is being taught, do you agree with the critique that for a long time it's been lacking? It has not been honest enough that this country has not really reckoned with that and not been willing to teach, especially white students, the truth about that. Do you agree with that?
I don't know that. I have a hard time saying that. I went to city schools all my life, and it was very diverse. I wouldn't say that I came out of school without an understanding of our history.
Why do you think
I can understand? You know what? I do understand the perspective of people who want to have more being able to see more of themselves in curriculum. And that's a really valuable thing. But to caricature people and groups is not helpful.
Well, why do you think the movement, such that it's a movement to change education or to update education to be more historically taking into account systemic racism, why do you think that this is happening, Mark?
You know, I'm not going to even try to guess that. I will say that I think you are making an a priori assumption about some of these things, and you're also just pushing an agenda that you're supporting.
I'm not. That's the second time you've said, Mark. I promise you, all I want to do. I think you are representing where literally millions of Americans and voters are. That's probably a big part of the reason that you won is a lot of people agree with everything you've said on this program. And mm-hmm. All we want to do is drill down and understand it. And it is not, you know, meant to be anything beyond that. I mean, Courtney's position is that we have a de facto message to students of color that they don't have much of a shot because if they look around, they'll see that they're already being treated differently. For example, she pointed
to... She's right. And she's right on that.
She pointed to suspension rates. Do you agree that suspension rates are an example of systemic racism in schools?
So let me answer, because this is a really loaded kind of question. It's almost like, are you still beating your wife? So you look... Give me a second.
Sure, yep.
We know that teachers in the Greek school districts were told you cannot discipline minority children because we need to lower the disproportionate suspension rate. They've been told that, and if you do things by not by color but by behavior, then sometimes you have to do that, right? So whether it's suspension or restorative practices, whatever you want to call it, but you have to deal with these issues. But if teachers are actually being taught, no, you may not do that, and we've been numerous teachers have told us we can't do anything anymore. So there's a problem. Now, how do you deal with that problem? Do we just simply say it's a racial issue and therefore, you know, if there's a disparity, well, there can't be a disparity. We look at what's going on in the city right now, and we've got people killing each other in among the black community. And there's a disparity going on, and it's a horrible one. And you know what? I've been involved with groups who are fighting back, trying to fight back against violence, because we see all of this as a problem. Now, do you want to say that we shouldn't... It's such a frustrating thing. Why aren't we looking at all of these instances and saying there's a problem here?
I think I hear what you're saying, and I think it's important to give Courtney and Brian some space to respond. I think what Mark is saying here is, you know, in the effort to advance some kind of equity, we are not allowing teachers to simply keep order in classrooms, that violence is up in his district, violence is up in Rochester, and there's such an effort to find equity that we're not actually creating a safe place for students to be, and that that is not helpful to students of any background. Mark, is that a fair description?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Courtney, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that we need to be looking at the way that our policies and procedures are being administered in the schools, code of conduct, policies, procedures. And I get where he's coming from, because maybe suspensions and the way we're disciplining isn't the answer. You know, I mean, I'm against long-term suspension anyway. So maybe it's, and why are these numbers up, and why are we doing this? Why are the behaviors up? What's really going on would be my answer. Maybe we should look at that.
Are you concerned, Courtney, that teachers, you know, can't effectively keep control of classrooms?
I actually don't know. I actually don't know. That's an area that I would need to, in my district, that's something I would need to have more information about.
Okay. Brian Moritz in Fairport. What do you think, Brian?
So I think, you know, I, again, speaking on Fairport, we have not heard anything ever to the things that Mark was saying, that, you know, teachers can't suspend black students, brown students, students of color. You know, I don't think that that's nothing we've ever heard of here. You know, I will say one thing that we are moving more toward Fairport wise is the notion of moving away, like Courtney said, moving away from the long-term suspensions, you know, we're one big focus in the district lately is restorative practices. So restorative circles. And again, the idea is not just punitive punishment. You did something bad. Okay. You go home for 5 days, you go home for 30 days or whatever, but trying to, you know, the idea is repairing that harm and trying to be less punitive and kind of bringing people together in a way. And I think that's one thing that we're trying to do. I do know that earlier in the year, and I don't know if it was specifically, I don't believe it was related to anything that was taught, any kind of racial imbalance or anything like that. I do know that this has been a challenging year in the classroom for teachers. You know, as students kind of came back to school full time for the first time since 2020, you know, I mean, this is, you know, the first, you know, quote unquote normal year, although there's really no normal year anymore. And, you know, I think that what you heard earlier in the year, what we heard at least, was there were a lot of behavioral problems and disciplinary problems. And it makes sense. Students, you know, there were getting back into a routine of being at school 5 days a week, of being around people, of having to interact with people, not on screens, but face to face and in person. And, you know, kids went through, all of us went through a lot over the past 2 years, a lot, kind of a collective trauma of the pandemic that's still ongoing, that hasn't really stopped. And so, you know, in terms of the behavioral issues, I think that, you know, I know that teachers and administrators, that's been a challenge for them in our district. And I have heard, you know, we have heard as a board that things are starting to improve, you know, kind of as we get to the year and kids kind of get, you know, things have slowly gotten better. But I do think that, you know, mental health supports for teachers and for students are key. And, you know, I don't think that anybody who supports an anti-racist curriculum or supports diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, it is not about keeping people separate. It's not about making one people feel bad or other people feel artificially good. It's not even about, and it's not about even seeing color, I think, or not seeing color. I think what it is, you know, an effort to, you know, I quoted this writer before, and his name escapes me, so forgive me. It's about creating belonging. Like, it's not just about being diverse. It's not just about being equitable or inclusive. It's all about being making people feel that they belong. You are allowed to be here. You are allowed to take up space. And in Fairport, what we've seen is a demographic shift over the past 10 to 15 years. You know, we've seen our minority population, our black and brown students, our non-white student population double in the past 15 years. And I think a lot of the efforts that we're supporting as a board and as a district are in recognition of that fact, and are in recognition of the world is changing and why this happened. You know, we saw the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020 kind of brought this back to the forefront. And I think that being able to recognize that the world in Fairport, in West Arundhati in Greece, the world is changing, and our job as a school, as a school district, is to prepare students for the world as it is and the world that they're going to be inheriting.
In our last minute, let me just say a couple of listeners have already reached out, sending us a few links so we can check out what Senator Samra Brouk has proposed regarding sex education and what is taught at different levels. I need to spend some time with that. I think we should seek to always be as accurate as possible when we're talking about whether proposed policy, existing policy, et cetera, et cetera. And I will do my due diligence on that, and we'll come back and talk about it soon on this program. And I'm sure Senator Brouk would want to talk about that. Let me also say that all three of the guests who responded and are on this program came on this program to share their thoughts at a time when they know things are contentious, and they all say that we can communicate, that school boards can be even more transparent, that things don't have to have the heat, that we can express we can express our views to each other with passion, but with also civility. And I'm all on board for that. So I just want to thank them for coming on board and coming on this program, and congratulate them on their wins, including Brian Moritz, elected to the Fairport School Board last week. Brian, I hope we can talk more. Thank you for making time.
Absolutely, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Mark Buonogurio, elected to the Greece Central School Board last week. Congratulations there, Mark. Thank you for coming on, and I do hope we can talk again.
Thank you, Evan.
And elected to the West Arundhati School Board, Courtney Schaus. Congratulations there. Let's talk again, Courtney.
Thank you.
All right, more connections coming up in just a moment.